Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18
plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say. Your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome, everyone, to Rockin' Nation Podcasts. This is Sam Snelling. Hello. How are you? With me is Tom Crean fanboy, Matthew J. Harris. Matt, how are you?
Kidnap Crean.
We are recording an episode of Dive Cuts. I believe this is episode 14 of season 3, so post Florida, yay, and Mississippi State. So... Since last I recorded, we have had both probably the best and coincidentally the worst performances of Consul Martin's coaching tenure at Missouri. Last Saturday night was awesome. Missouri put up 91 points in a home game against Florida and whipped the Gators. Florida actually played pretty decent offense. Yeah. They shot the ball well, but they just could not figure out what Missouri was doing offensively, which is kind of funny because it seems like everybody else has. So in turn, the Tigers go on a trip to Starkville and proceed to get blown out before the first media timeout and lose in what was the least efficient game in Consul Martin's tenure, the least amount of points since Missouri scored 43 against Texas A&M and Kim Anderson's final home game. That's a good memory for you there. Senior night. Here's our worst performance. It's been a weird week. A weird, weird week. Matt, anything you want to get off your chest to start?
Regression to the mean is proven. You just don't want to see it like such a wild swing between poles, though. Like... When you think of like a normal distribution, we got the tail ends in 4 days, and I don't think anybody in this fan base is prepared for that kind of whiplash. So I think everyone's just kind of jarred by just how just stark that contrast was.
And I think, like, you know, so I talked about regression to the mean a little bit in both of the study hall pieces about it, because I think it's warranted, mainly because I don't think Mizzou is as bad of a shooting team as they've been all season. I think that they've got some guys who are more capable of making shots than they have made you know, all year. So it's sort of like they just kind of saved everything up for the game against Florida. And that sort of took, I guess, the you know, the mean a little bit too high. And so this was sort of the, you know, the course correction, you know, for the Tigers, because they're certainly not as bad as they played against Mississippi State. That was a wild swing. I can say pretty definitively, they're not as good as they played against Florida. Like, that was the high end. So that's sort of like, you know, the best game that you're going to get from Missouri offensively. Mississippi State just happened to be kind of the worst game that you're going to get from Missouri offensively. So if you kind of put them together, it would be nice to hit that median more often. And I think the problem with Missouri is right now is that median has been too low. They need to push it up, even if it's just a little bit.
Yeah, the one thing that had been steadily happening is they've been steadily, you know, bumping their three-point shooting rate, you know, not north of 33%, but they were getting kind of semi-close to the NCAA average. And the turnover rate had been pretty solid. I mean, again, Missouri's a team that under Konzo Martin's been a little bit high, but they've done a nice job kind of keeping the turnovers in check. And so you kind of had at least figured that, you know, they were kind of showing some positive signs of, you know, at least stabilizing offensively. And, you know, the road trip to Kentucky, kind of like we said a couple weeks ago, went as expected. The Tennessee game, Tennessee shot the lights out, Missouri did not, and that kind of flipped it. And then going into the Florida game, you know, I think we were sort of skeptical as to what Missouri could do, and we really thought they needed to, you know, find a way to either get Florida to, you know, come out and guard shooters to open up driving lanes, or they were going to have to be really committed to, you know, setting high ball screens for Drew Smith and letting him go to work. And they did the latter. They created some early transition. They got out, and then they, you know, managed to push the tempo a bit. They were really aggressive early in the clock with, you know, ball screens and roll and replace actions, kind of putting Javon Pickett in the replace slot and letting him catch high, and then deciding if he wanted to drive behind the initial screener. So just the way they structured the offense and then the shooting performance behind it, I think you and I sort of said after the Florida game, you know, privately, like, yeah, the shooting performance is definitely, you know, way, way outside the norm. But the takeaway was that what they were doing to generate those shots might have been a sustainable path for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah. And that was sort of my big takeaway, was I really don't care about the shooting numbers. I care about how they're creating shots, and how they're creating quality shots, and how they're creating unguarded shots, or how they're getting, you know, their guards in positions where they can get quality rim attacks. You know, Florida's going to send, you know, Kerry Blackshear out of the paint to hard hedge. Yeah, we're gonna have Reed Nico slip, or we're going to have our guy turn in the corner and go. They
makes no sense.
Yeah, it how they were using Blackshear and pick and roll coverage didn't make any sense whatsoever. And because Florida plays on the line, up the line so much, the gaps were just huge when they could hit them. And so the general thought was, okay, they're going to go on the road. It's going to be tough, but maybe they've kind of figured out a new formula for how they can create shots that are going to be worthwhile. And then it was like they just took that game plan, crumpled it up, lit it on fire, and just forgot about it, because they went back to kind of what they'd done before, which is, we're kind of going to, you know, dribble the ball up. We're going to run some off-ball screening action. We're not going to set a pick and roll for any guard until midway through the shot clock. And so I think that was what was more jarring, was setting aside the shooting and, you know, all the other metrics. Just what was jarring to me was how stark the stylistic contrast was from one game from another, especially because of the shot creation that was coming in the game where they shot it so well. So that's what stuck out to me above all else.
Yeah, I think, like, early on in the season, you know, particularly when Tillman was more involved, they were able to, you know, get to the rim. And when they weren't getting to the rim, the shots they were getting were, for the most part, pretty good shots. They were just missing them a lot. You know, it's just like, that's kind of how it goes, right? As the season wore on, and then, you know, Tillman kind of went into a little bit of a hole and struggled, you could see that they were still able to kind of get to the rim, you know, but the shots that they were getting on the outside weren't as good as shots. The offense was starting to slow down, you know, because I think when you get into a habit of or not habit, but when you're missing a lot of shots, you know, the tendency is to, you know, maybe be less aggressive, to, you know, pass up, you know, a decent look, hoping to get a better look. You know, you're a little trigger shy, basically. And you kind of see that kind of take over in like the second half of the non-con. Now as they're, and I think like this is the thing that I saw, and their approach against Florida was they were kind of back to being aggressive and looking to score earlier in the shot clock. And I think that's been kind of my complaint over like the last, you know, 10 games or so, or 8 games, however many it's been, where they would be wanting to find the right shot, and doing so, like, they're not actively looking for you're right, a good shot, you know, in search of the great shot. And I think, like, that's one of the things that we kind of talked about. I can't remember if it was since Mississippi State or I think it was since Florida, but, you know, the early clock looks that you get, and not even necessarily in transition. So anytime you can get out and run and get a, you know, a layup, 2-on-1, whatever, like that's going to be a good shot. I'm talking about, like, you know, the defense is still set, but you're still pushing the ball and getting an early, you know, ball screen, or getting the ball hit ahead to a wing who's going to look to attack within the first 5 or 8 seconds of you having the ball. And that's going to force the defense to shift, you know, the same way it would as if you, you know, walk the ball up the court, pass it 3 times, throw the ball to Jeremiah Tillman on the block, right? But now you're getting that action much sooner. And I thought that, like, that's the thing that I think, you know, and really, like, part of it is, like, Mississippi State did a good job of getting back in transition. They were also... They were getting good shots. They were rebounding the ball well, and when they were turning the ball over, it was dead ball turnovers. Like, they didn't have a whole lot of live ball turnovers. Where Florida was kind of the opposite. Like, Florida, when they turned the ball over, it was live. Missouri was getting steals, and so that causes more of that transition action. So there is some of it in the gameplay that prevented Missouri from getting there, but you definitely want to see them. At some point very soon, figure out that it's going to benefit their overall offensive production to attack early and attack often and stay in attack mode. Even if you kind of have a few possessions in a row where things kind of don't go your way, like, you still need to be aggressive offensively. And, you know, I realize that them not having a ton of weapons can kind of limit that at times, but I still think you have enough guys who have the ability to at least kind of get out and go towards.
That's the fair point about the live ball action there, because when you're having to take the ball out of the bucket for the first 5 minutes of the game and you're down 10-0, I mean, we laugh, but I mean, you can't really get your mojo going. You can't really establish kind of that rhythm early. And you can't really, you know, find opportunities to grab, go, have your guys get out and beat their man down the floor and kind of run to a spot and have a guy and have. And also, I think it matters about personnel to a certain degree, because Reed Nico's doing everything he can. But if you're going to give me an ideal rim runner, it is not Reed Nico. So it gets a little bit hard there for them. But I guess the thing that was sort of interesting to me was, even if you don't, you know, have your guy hit ahead for an open jumper or have a guard sprint to a spot on the wing for that jumper or drive the ball baseline there. Reed can still be a guy who you can get the ball out and you can run, and I've said this ad nauseum, some drag, pick, and roll action for Drew and just let him sort of get downhill early in a possession. Even if you quick out, let you get up the floor, you run that drag, pick, and roll with 24 seconds on the shot clock, at least you're getting action going to the rim early. And at least you're putting pressure on the internal kind of back line of the defense to either rotate and help. And if it doesn't work, you can at least kick out, reset, and then run screening action again. But I guess that's been my thing, is there's not really an interest to kind of probe that defense early on for them. And, you know, you can do that within the scale of an offense. There are coaches in this country who, you know, don't generate a ton of transition possessions, but their possession lengths are short because they look to attack early in the shot clock. You know, they look to get the ball out. They look to try and put pressure on defenses when they're cross-matching. And does it always work out? No, but at least what they're doing is they're forcing the defense to have to be attentive, and at least they're maybe going to occasionally catch a defense out or get an odd man matchup that they like. So it just seems so weird that that approach worked on Saturday, and then they just went away from it immediately against a team, especially one in the half court where, you know, there's a legit back line there. You know, if you're going to try and get good twos, and Missouri doesn't take mid-range jumpers at all, they don't take many shots outside of 10 feet, why would you want to let the defense get set with Abdullah Du and Reggie Barry on the back line? Like, wouldn't you want to get the ball out quick and look to attack, get downhill, maybe catch a guard coming back over and having to come over and help? Maybe you draw a foul. Maybe you get an easy layup. But it just seemed weird that they were letting a team that had a more established back line and two good rim protectors get set. Especially,
and I can't remember, did we talk about that in the last podcast? Like, some of my fears kind of going into this was that, you know, the difference in the front court, you know, and having two really good defenders right around the rim, you know, and Missouri kind of struggling to shoot from the outside, taking the ball inside and basically having it blocked all night long. I mean, that was just something that I sort of envisioned. And I actually just pulled up the game flow of the 2019 trip to Starkville. And it actually was a pretty similar game flow. Now, they didn't have the huge run to start out, you know, but Missouri really struggled to score the ball in the first half. And it took them, looks like they went on a late first half 12-2 run to make it not embarrassing. But then State closed on a 16-2 run in the last 5 minutes or so. But they had, even back then, they had 4 points in the first 10 minutes. And what, you know, it's like the same thing this year. Like, they just, no matter what they did, they were just unable to find points early. And it just looked like it was going to be, like, that was going to be it for them. Now, granted, you know, Mississippi State was a little bit better of a team last year. I think they finished like top 30 in KenPom, and what were they, like a 5 seed and got bounced? Yeah, so
they were a 5 seed. They were number 21 in KenPom. They were a 5 seed. They lost to a really good Liberty team. They lost, to be fair. Liberty was, I think, slightly underseeded. I thought they should have been a little bit higher in the mix, but the one thing that, when you look at,
I think it was the you get dinged for being a Falwell school is like automatically, you know, drop a few seeds just for being Liberty.
I mean, maybe they hate them. I'm not wading into that, but the
not taking the bait.
Nope, not doing that. But the interesting thing when you look at, and I sort of mentioned this before we started, is Mississippi State is kind of interesting in how they approach things defensively, because what they can do is they don't, like, Mississippi State is not a high-tempo team. They don't push the pace at all. You know, Hallen's gotten even slower since he went to Starkville. But they're oddly talented at creating kind of live ball turnovers or at creating transition possessions. So they don't play fast in the half court. But I think I told you, they just have this knack of sitting down, guarding, rebounding, and just steadily draining you of possessions throughout the game. Missouri decided to get it out of the way quickly with 5 or 6 in the first 5 minutes, but I think just the matchup that Hallen provides them is tough. I don't think Hallen looks at Missouri and is like, oh God, we're going to get in a rock fight. That's kind of Hallen's style too, and his team is a little bit better offensively this year, and they're much better at creating turnovers, and they did that on Saturday, and they did that on Tuesday night, and it, you know, they supplemented, you know, their size. And
well, they also have, like, legitimately, so
they have great bigs.
It helps to have Reggie Perry
and Abdul Adu,
who is probably going to be a first round pick. Abdul Adu is a great defensive rim protector. Like, he's not a wonderful offensive guy. You're not going to pitch him the ball on the block a lot, but he defends, he rebounds, and he can convert on the offensive glass. But you have Reggie Perry, who I think is a first round talent. Nick Weatherspoon, who is still kind of getting his footing, but is a guy who can make shots. And Robert Woodard, who I really like Woodard a lot, as he's developing a jump shot and ultra athletic and a guy that can, you know, make it tough on you. And so they're a team I think that is, they're about what I thought they would be this year.
They just don't have any depth. That's what's holding them back, is once you get outside of that starting core, there's just not a lot there for them, or not a lot proven at this point.
And Missouri had the misfortune of also, I mean, they were 0-3 going into that game. After
State looked desperate.
Yeah, like they looked after a really close loss. I mean, I swear, like, and I think I told you this. I think, like, Will Wade has some sort of deal with the devil or voodoo magic going on, which, you know, wouldn't surprise me. It is Baton Rouge. But they just, like, all they do is win one possession games. Like, LSU is not all that impressive, and yet they're undefeated. And Mississippi State has just had, like, some tough luck. Yeah, they kind of got blown out at Alabama. You know, but they played Auburn pretty tough, and then Auburn just sort of pulled away a little bit in the second half and sort of kept their distance. So it was a team that was 0-3 and better than their 0-3 record, and certainly ready for a win. So it was, I don't know, perfect storm. And I'm not trying to justify as bad as Missouri played. Like, I don't think you can justify that level of poor play. But it was kind of the perfect storm against them. And you just hope that the recovery, now they're going to go to Alabama, and they're actually already in Tuscaloosa because of inclement weather coming in, wanted to get ahead of the weather. Alabama's coming off a huge emotional win over Auburn. It's Auburn's first loss, big rival. You beat them, and there's some, and they beat them soundly too, right?
Yeah, they drummed them.
See, by 19. So you hope maybe there's a little bit of a pendulum swing. But Alabama's, like, really talented offensively, but they don't quite defend, and they certainly don't defend around the rim the way Mississippi State does. So there's some realistic hope that, you know, Missouri could kind of recover from this and play a tight game, hopefully going to pull it out in Tuscaloosa.
The tough part for them is that they're going to need to, you know, Nate Oates is an analytics-inspired coach. You know, they absolutely just punch the gas in terms of tempo. They jack a lot of threes. It's either, I mean, if you look at their shot chart, it's threes, free throws, and then layups. I mean, they are a team that's going to get out, and they've got guards. They've got 5 guards who they can mix and match with. They're shallow in the front court, but that doesn't really matter because Missouri is kind of in a pickle there. So it's just going to be interesting to see how that, who wins the pace war there. If Nate Oates gets it where he wants, I think it could be bad news because they're going to keep shooting. They've got
their number 3 in adjusted tempo.
Yeah, they want to run you out of the gym. They want to put you through a conditioning test. And I think that, you know, you talk about their defense, their defensive ratings actually come down like 3 points per possession, 3 points per 100 possessions as non-con wound down. I think they weren't used to how to play defense, kind of playing at that tempo. They've improved. I mean, yes, the metrics still look bad, but I think they've kind of gotten their sea legs at either end, and they're figuring it out. But Kyra Lewis is really good. John Petty is making shots. Jaden Shackelford's a really nice freshman. James Bolden is kind of a microwave scorer for them off the bench, a West Virginia transfer or who could play some combo guard.
I think Petty is having the kind of shooting year that probably a lot of people were hoping that we get from Mark Smith.
Yeah.
You know, Mark was about the same, you know, kind of upper 40s last year before he got hurt. And that's right where John Petty, like John Petty has not been phased one iota by the extended three-point line. He's taken 112 threes already and is hitting 48% of them. So it's definitely a guy that you got to stick with. And this is my thing about, you know, Missouri's added struggles offensively is just having guys that can make outside shots, and what that does to a defense is extends it and just sort of creates those gaps. So if you have to defend Mark Smith and you have to defend, you know, Torrance Watson, who had another horrid shooting night, if you have to defend guys outside the three-point line, then it's going to make it easier for Drew Smith to kind of turn the corner on a pick and roll and hit cutters or hit, you know, an open shooter. Like, that's sort of the premises of the offense, and it doesn't work if you're not making shots. So
I'm interested in what the scout is for this team defensively, because Missouri tends to, I mean, they have gotten a little bit more aggressive in ball screen coverage this year, and they will extend a little bit, but they're still kind of, I think, and you can tell me if you disagree, they're still kind of a gapping-based team. They still want to sit down in gaps. They still kind of want to play a little pack line-ish. And
well, so
that's going to be fine. That's going to be fine with Bama, because Bama wants to shoot from deep all day, and they want to get down and shoot quickly. So
I think that the your take is a little more prescient when it comes to like the personnel on the floor. I think with Tillman, and when they go small, they tend to hard hedge and double and blitz ball screens or ice. You know, but when they're like, certainly against a team like Mississippi State, and I think definitely against Kentucky, you know, that, so I think that they're versatile, and they'll, I certainly think that he's going to stick a body on John Petty, and as long as John Petty is within 30 feet of the rim, there's going to be somebody.
Yeah, they're going to lock and trail him all day. It's just, it's going to be interesting what they do in terms of how they, because Missouri sometimes will, they're committed to getting back and getting matched up a little bit, but it'll be interesting what happens if they go to the boards and Bama can win the glass and get out quick.
Well, and you know, like, this is another thing about sort of you know, matchups and sort of the struggle of matching up against Mississippi State, because Mississippi State's a team that, like, they do like to play big. You know, they do like Perry and Adu on the floor together. You know, so Missouri's ability to sort of go to some of their smaller lineups is out the door. You know, they played a lot of Mitchell Smith and Reed Nicko together. And when,
oh, they can go four guard.
Well, yeah, and I think that's the advantage of going, you know, and playing Alabama. Even if Alabama is a much more dangerous team offensively, I think you look at the advantages that Missouri has, and some of their best offense is when guys like are able to kind of, you know, get up, make plays and play with a smaller lineup, and you have fewer minutes from guys like Nicko, and you can even move, you know, Mitch to the five. You can play Trey Jackson at the five, and if you're able to kind of get away with some of that stuff, I think you can see some grounds kind of being made up offensively. And maybe it doesn't make a difference, but if you're looking for reasons to be hopeful kind of going into this game on Saturday, I think that they exist much more so than they did for, you know, the game against Mississippi or Mississippi State.
Yeah, because they don't use Galen Smith a ton, and he's a. They usually just stick with Alex Reese at the center spot. Herb Jones is listed as a forward, but he's 6'7", 205. He's basically a fourth wing on the floor. Longer and rangier, but they'll even sometimes go Lewis, Shackelford, Petty, Bolden. Like, they'll go that micro small and they'll just play four out around Galen Smith, who's not a guy who is a real scoring threat. Or Alex Reiss, I should say. Reiss is a high efficiency guy, but he's only getting 18.5% usage. So you're not really looking for Alex Reiss to be kind of an offensive factor. Yeah. He's there hopefully to provide some rim protection, some rebounding, and occasionally a bucket. So
yeah, Reiss plays about 52% of the minutes. Davis,
yeah, they split.
Davis plays about 44, and then Smith plays 31. So, I mean, that's those guys will see a little bit of floor time together, but for the most part, they're playing one big.
Yeah, they're gonna play. They're gonna play four out, basically. They'll come
and
down.
That's gonna be like that. That is to their advantage too. Like, they're gonna be a better, more efficient offensive team when they have, you know, more skill players in the floor.
Well, yeah, and you know, they can run Lewis. You can put Lewis in pick and rolls or have him create an isolation. You space Petty, and then you've got, if you wanted to play four guards, you have Bolden, who's a guy who's looking to score but can shoot the three ball well. Herb Jones does not shoot jumpers. He's a guy who's looking to get to the rim or get around the rim. So you have some nice mix of skill sets from your guards there, and you're just really asking Reiss to try and clean up misses, occasionally hit a step out jumper, and just defend. So,
hey, Matt. I think this is a game where you could get Trey Jackson some minutes. What do you think?
That's not a bad idea.
one of the things that like we've talked
novel.
About.
That's crazy.
Look, we at have you just talked being about like in his high school and AAU days, Jackson really played a lot of the five.
Out of necessity, yeah.
Out of necessity, and Missouri's really trying to condition him a little bit more to be kind of that that combo forward type that they're looking to kind of build around. Is there that much of a learning curve? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But if you could get him for, 8 to 10 minutes at the five, I think that that makes you more athletic and more versatile. And I think you can pull it off against Alabama. I think you certainly probably need to make sure that that's like a lineup where you have both Drew and Mark Smith and maybe Javon Pickett, for some rebounding acumen. But I think it could work.
Yeah, I was thinking you could, as much as Reed's tried to, plug the gap here, this should be a game where you really don't need Reed or Axel Okongo, I don't think. I think I would... rather have Mitchell Smith, Kobe Brown, and Trey Jackson cycling between the four and the five, just because I'd want the switchability. I'd want some more athletic guys. I'd want some guys comfortable working in space a little bit, and frankly, guys who are just going to be conditioned to be able to get up and down the floor a little bit. Bama's not a team that really hammers you on the glass. They're not a great rebounding team. So you're not really going to give up a ton, even in conference play so far. They're 12th in offensive rebound percentage. They're not going to the glass a ton. So if you can get misses and you can kind of play a little bit with some verve and some tempo, it could be interesting. But yeah, Trey definitely needs more than 1 minute. Definitely more than 1 minute.
Well, we are... We are preachers of the at the altar of Trey, so it's going to happen one of these days. Or...
I mean, look, Parker Braun got into the trifecta, and damn it, if Evan Yurkus and Travis Ford weren't hunting, not Travis Ford, but Travis's son, if they weren't hunting to get in
Brooks.
There too, if Brooks and Evan weren't looking to get in there too, the best lineups for Missouri at Starkville were the walk-ons late, so... Maybe it's a sign. Maybe it's a sign.
Well, I think there is a little bit of reason to think that Missouri could recover. We'll just kind of put it that way, and they certainly need to. Although, let's look at what's coming up. So, Alabama on Saturday. They get a home game on Tuesday against Texas A&M, who has been playing better. They put up a big fight to LSU. Of course, LSU won a close game. Voodoo magic. LSU, they were down like 6 or 8.
They're like down in the last 1:10 left.
Last minute or 2 minutes in the game, they hit a three, and A&M turned the ball over. It came down, hit another three, all within like 20 seconds. It was like, well, there went that 6-point lead.
Yep.
And forced overtime. The last minute or so of regulation on that was horrid to watch. It was horrible basketball. Terrible shots were taken. I actually think, if I'm remembering the play correctly, but I think they probably could have called Skylar May for a charge and sort of bit the whistle, which, you know, I don't mind, but I like being right about LSU. And damn it, if they go like 13-5 this year, I'm going to be mad just because, like, there's no reason why this team should be that good. But yeah, so A&M started off, opened SEC play with a loss at Arkansas, beat Ole Miss in an excruciating game at home, then whipped Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt was coming off the news of
Neesmith being hurt.
Aaron Neesmith. Was blanked on his name for a second. He has stress fracture, is out indefinitely, much like our own Jeremiah Tillman. Vanderbilt just found out that news, promptly go out and get blown out at home to Texas A&M. So they were, they're 2-2 with a winnable game at home against South Carolina, who is coming off a ridiculous buzzer beater in beating Kentucky. This league, this whole college basketball season,
it's all trash.
It's just...
Oscar the Grouch would love this. It's all garbage.
So realistically, the 137th ranked Texas A&M Aggies could come into Mizzou Arena next Tuesday at 3-2 in league play, and already probably at more wins than I might have expected them to have a month ago. So they've got A&M, and then the following Saturday, the 25th, is the Big 12 SEC showdown, and that's a trip to West Virginia.
Ooh.
And West Virginia is currently number 5 in KenPom.
Yeah.
They have recovered quite a bit from a down year last year. I don't know. Have you had a chance to watch the Mountaineers?
They play fast. They turn you over a lot. And they got the front line of Derek Culver and Oscar Tshiebwe. 6'9" and 6'10". 255 and 258. Oscar's a freshman and Derek is a sophomore. So they got big long dudes inside. They play fast and turn you over. Nothing wrong with that mix at all.
Just Tshiebwe is... he is a monster.
It's like if Kofi Cockburn played on Alabama. That's kind of what it is. It's you put a
So Kofi though is like, he's big, right?
Yeah.
Like Tshiebwe is more agile. He's a better athlete. But he has the sort of same, like, take up space, kind of put you through the rim. And then Culver, I think Culver is a really, really nice player. So those guys are really pretty good. And
he's got the number. Oscar leads the nation in offensive rebound rate. He is blocking 7.2. His block percentage is 7.2. He draws 6.6 fouls per 40 minutes and shoots 60% inside the arc. So yeah, that's who you get to handle on the back line. So just that's an early briefing for everyone next week. You can watch. I'm gonna watch. But I'm going in with clear eyes on what could happen in Morgantown.
Yeah, it's a tough draw. The fact that they have to play that game on the road too. So let's beat Alabama, beat Texas A&M. That puts you at 11-7 and 3-3 in league play. Whatever happens in Morgantown happens. You come back, you get Georgia, South Carolina, A&M again. Three winnable games.
That's when you got to make something happen, right?
Yeah, so I think, you know, even if you end up losing at Alabama, you got to beat Texas A&M. If you're at 2-4, like, you could go and flip that pretty quickly to 5-4 if you kind of do things right.
I mean, at 2-4, the only outcome that would not have been predicted would have been the loss to Tennessee. So that's, again, I think the outcome in Mississippi State was not surprising. That's been projected as a loss since October. I think how it happened was certainly jarring for folks, but that was long in the loss column. So is Bama. Bama's been a projected loss since way back when KenPom first dropped the updated rankings in October. So they should be 3-3, should be the expected record if they come out at 2-4. You're one game behind where you need to be. So you got to pick up a win somewhere else. But the biggest deal at that point would be to sweep those three games of Georgia, Carolina, A&M to get back over 500. And then hope you can pick off, you know, Arkansas at home or Auburn at home. Just make it ugly, make it a rock fight, and pick off one of those in Columbia. That's really sort of the longer.
I'm actually like really curious to see how both of those teams, how things sort of play out with both of those teams, like over the next couple weeks.
Yeah,
because, you know, like, you and I, I mean, at this point, we've come to the realization that everybody's bad. But I mean, Auburn just got blown out, and that's their first loss of the year. They didn't play anybody.
Yeah.
So they beat, I think, NC State at home was their best win.
Arkansas hasn't played anybody.
Well, right. And so, like, you know, it, like, I wonder if you, like, flipped it and Auburn was playing a schedule closer to, like, Missouri's, if they were playing a little bit tougher teams, you know. And not that Missouri's been playing murderer's row, but they've been playing more competent teams than Auburn has.
Missouri's schedule got front-loaded this year. I mean, that was always sort of the thing. I think when we saw the schedule, I think I told you, like, January is going to be brutal for them. They don't get a break from, you know, January 4 probably through the 25th. That's a 5 or right. 6 game stretch. We were just hoping for 500. That was your hope, was you could come out of that kind of unscathed, maybe get a couple quad one wins, which this game at Bama would be a quad one win if they pick it up. So that's the other silver lining. If they beat Bama, that's a game they weren't expected to win. They'll come out of this early stretch with two potential Q1 wins. You know, again, we're not talking about the NCAA tournament or the bubble right now, but, you know, in a year where everybody is bad, as many quality wins as you can get never hurts. So,
right. You know, and so flipping from Auburn to Arkansas, I mean, Arkansas, they have a solid win at Indiana.
I'm just saying, but
outside of that, I mean, everything is, Georgia Tech, which they hit a ridiculous shot after nobody scored in overtime, to win that game. North Texas, I'm looking at their KenPom profile. So the teams that they've beaten that are inside the top 100 are North Texas, Georgia Tech, and Indiana. So Georgia Tech is not good. They're 84th. And then in league play, they lost to LSU. Oh, look, one possession game. LSU won. Voodoo Magic. Beat A&M, Ole Miss, and Vanderbilt, who at this point, Ole Miss and Vanderbilt are defeated in league play. And A&M, we've talked about them. They're bad also. So Up next, Arkansas has Kentucky, Mississippi State. Then they play TCU. TCU's been okay. So it'll be interesting to see how they perform.
They only play two sub 100 KenPom teams the rest of the way. There's no let up for them. So, you know, maybe
they play six games before they play Missouri, Matt. What is your prediction on their record in those six games? It is Kentucky at home, at Mississippi State, TCU at home, South Carolina at home, Alabama on the road, Auburn at home.
Bud Walton gets jacked up for Kentucky. And they'll come out and they'll play hard.
Kentucky's also coming off a loss.
It'll be tight. I'll give it to Kentucky. Kentucky has post depth and Arkansas doesn't. Like, they're just going to pound the ball inside and just try and chew them up that way. I think they'll lose at Mississippi State. I think they'll get TCU.
That is a projected loss.
I'll say they'll get TCU. So that's two loss. So that's one win. They'll beat South Carolina. That's two. I like Auburn more than I like Arkansas. I think they'll have three. I think they'll have at least three losses. I think 3-3 is the best case.
So you think 3-3? Yeah, I was gonna say I bet they go 3-3. So, I'll say lost Kentucky, lost Mississippi State, lost to. Well, actually, I'm kind of looking at this. State 2-4 is pretty realistic.
That becomes a sweat.
I think they lose Kentucky and Mississippi State.
And I think they'll lose at Bama. So really, TCU becomes a swing.
Probably lose at Bama
for them. If they can beat TCU, then I think that's going to help them. But the schedule gets a little bit tougher for them right now. They love Musk right now, but they have not.
There's only two. Two games left on their schedule that are against sub 100 teams.
Yep, South Carolina, and then the season finale against A&M on the road.
So they're like the opposite of Missouri. They got a break, and then it goes. But we're delaying the inevitable here. We're up at 45 minutes already. So it's going to be an interesting weekend, to say the least. You got time to record next week?
Yeah, I got time to record next week.
So we'll probably go Wednesday. Actually, no. Wednesday, I'm going out for dinner, so we'll have to go Thursday again.
I like that we tell people the calendar.
You got to be ready for when they're going to get the next podcast.
If you want to rob Sam's home, next Wednesday is the ideal time.
Hey, I've got a nice security system with cameras and everything. So for anyone who is in St. Louis and they are foodies, which I know there's got to be at least like one or two of you that listen to this podcast that are in that category. I am going to take my wife. My wife's birthday was yesterday, but for her birthday, we're going to do the omakase dinner at Indo next Wednesday. I'm very excited about this. So if you're a foodie, you know what that means. Like, that is probably the best meal I'm going to eat this year. So I am not going to come home and record a podcast. We will wait until Thursday, and I will tell you all about it.
Give us your birthday.
You can check Instagram. There'll probably be a few pictures of food on there too. So
it's going to be Bon Appetit and basketball next Thursday.
Oh, I think at this point people would expect nothing less. So, Matt, any last words before we get out of here?
Just a friendly reminder to people. I know you get frustrated during games and in the immediate aftermath, but this is just a PSA. Konzo Martin can't be fired this year. It's happened. I keep getting it, you know, randomly. I get pinged about it. He's contractually safe through May 1 of 2020. And even if they were to, in some world, fire him, they would still owe him $6 million. So what I'm trying to tell you is the prenup for Konzo is very strong, and so I know you're frustrated. I know it's the way of fans to say we need to fire the coach, we need to, the progress isn't here. I'm telling you, the contract doesn't allow that, so make peace with that.
So I'm going to say...
Just embrace that. Just that's my PSA.
So
I needed to get that out there.
So why don't we just, we'll be positive. And if you cannot be positive, then you laugh about it. Trust me,
that's how
we lived through the Kim Anderson years. And as somebody who podcasted through the Kim Anderson years, I can tell you that sometimes you just have to laugh. And so here's a nugget that we discovered before we came on the air. Missouri's performance against Mississippi State was one of the five worst offensive efficiency performances in the KenPom era. So if you want to think about how bad things were, three of the other top five, one came under Quinn Snyder. The other three were Kim Anderson teams. So it could always be worse. It could always be worse. It's
basketball, folks.
Let's just hope it gets better. So until next week, we'll be back. Make sure that you you stay tuned and head to Rock Nation, blah, 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 all that stuff. Follow him on Twitter, me on Twitter. Mitch, let's fade it out. We'll talk to you next week.